the man with the game information. Game and Steve, Game and Steve. Xbox, Nintendo, PC, or PlayStation. Game and Steve, Game and Steve. Giving the news to the next generation. Game and Steve. Give me news,
give me news,
give me views,
give me views.
Game and Steve.
Gentlemen, please put your hands together for the hardest working man in the game industry, the one-man vortex of gaming information, the man who taught Mario how to fix pipes, ladies and gentlemen, Gaming Steve!
Hey there, welcome to Gaming Steve, the home of intelligent game discussion. I'm your host, Steve Glicker, and in this week's show, I go through the latest gaming news. I have my big talk about my time in history and interaction with Blizzard, as well as some information on what Titan was and how it influenced Overwatch. I have some show mail, and then some final thoughts. So let's jump right into this week's news.
Gaming news!
So considering I thought it was a really slow news week, I seem to have a huge stack of papers in front of me. I don't know how that happened. Well, let's just get right into it. So first up is Persona 5. The release date was announced for Japan, and you can see the trailer online. So Persona 5 coming out September 15th, 2016 in Japan for, looks like, the PlayStation 4. And looks like, is it also coming out for PlayStation 3? That's what it says here. Why would it? Maybe it is. PlayStation 2. Sorry, it's PlayStation 4 and PlayStation 3. So those of you who have not seen or played or know anything about Persona, I would say check out the Persona 5 trailer. Just do it. It's in Japanese. There's probably no game that epitomizes Japanese culture and gaming more than the Persona series. These games are fantastic. If you like Japanese role-playing games, Japanese RPGs, you really, this is it. This is the pinnacle of Japanese role-playing, even more than Final Fantasy. Some people will say the Final Fantasy series. Final Fantasy, I'd probably say yes, in terms of fantasy Japanese role-playing, but the thing that Persona has for it, it has the anime, it has the J-pop music, it has Japanese culture seeping from it. I've learned more about Japanese culture playing these games than all other games combined. It has romance in it, which is a big part of these Japanese gaming. It has weird, strange, bizarre monsters that you only see in Persona games. It even has sort of a monster-building universe, almost like Pokemon, where you can take existing creatures that you summon and combine them to make new creatures. And, of course, it has grinding, because there would be no Japanese game without some grinding. And also it has some crazy stories, and it has high school kids. You put all that together, and you have, you know, pretty, it's almost horrible, but almost every cliche of Japanese gaming and culture is kind of in this game, but it embraces it and it's beautiful. It is great, these games. The Persona series has been around a while. It really got popular with Persona 3. That one is where it's sort of like broken. And then Persona 4 is just absolutely fantastic. I would strongly recommend you get Persona 4. Persona 4 Golden is probably the best one. It's for the PS Vita, unfortunately. It's $20. I mean, it's practically worth it. The game is gargantuan. And there's a lot to it. The story is incredibly deep. And you basically are a Japanese student at a school. And they all kind of have the same story, where you're a student at the school and strange things are happening, and then you start exploring a sort of a shadow world, and then you get stronger and stronger, and then you build up personas, which are alternate personalities that you can summon as monsters to fight other creatures that are really bizarre creatures that in all the Persona games, actually, sound like the Final Fantasy games, you start seeing over and over again. But take a look at the trailer alone, and that is what the game looks like. The Persona 5 trailer looks just absolutely gorgeous. It's one of the most beautiful trailers I've ever seen. I imagine, unfortunately, it's coming out in Japan only in September, so when it'll come out in the U.S. is probably not till next year at the soonest. The good news is it will probably, most likely, 99.9% chance come out in the U.S. because these games do very well here. They also get highest honors. They usually always win a billion awards, so I can't see any reason why they wouldn't come here. They sell pretty well. Nothing like Final Fantasy, and not even close to those numbers. But if you haven't played a Persona game and you like even a little bit of Japanese gaming and Japanese role-playing, you got to try these out. You owe it to yourself. Next up is Uncharted 4 comes out next week and comes out May 10th. The reviews have been absolutely outstanding. This is a funny little game. If you go back way to the original gaming, Steve, way to the early episodes from like 10 years ago, I reviewed Uncharted 1. And it was one of these games that no one ever saw. It didn't really have any press to it. It kind of came out, and I was stunned how good this game was. Especially, really, was the voice acting. I thought the voice acting in Uncharted 1 was better than most movies. I mean, it was, and it still holds up to this day. People always talk about how amazing the acting and the characters are, and the quips and the funny lines they have in the games. Obviously, the Uncharted series has grown quite a bit since Uncharted 1, but Uncharted 1 was truly like an organic hit. It just kind of came out of nowhere. It grew by word of mouth and just how good it really was. If you look at it now, it's a bit rough around the edges, but Uncharted 4 is getting ridiculous reviews. This is the last game in the Uncharted series, so good news is it's coming out next week. For those of you who have never played an Uncharted game, I would recommend you try it just for the set pieces alone. Uncharted 2 has one of the best openings of ever made for video games. Well, Uncharted 2 is fantastic. It holds up really well even today. I mean, it's an older game, but man, it still looks, it looked gorgeous back then, and it still looks gorgeous now. That's one thing also the Persona games, Persona, the Uncharted games have, is that they just look out of sight. So far, so good. Looks like the reviews are out of sight, and it comes out next week. Next up, EA yesterday on Star Wars Day announced that the makers of Titanfall are making a new Star Wars game. So Respawn Entertainment, the guys who made Titanfall, are making a new Star Wars game. All they said, it's a all-new third-person action-adventure game set in the Star Wars universe. That's all we know at the moment. So this is the funny thing. I'm one of the biggest Star Wars fans of all time. I love Star Wars. I could talk about Star Wars at the end of time. I know everything about the universe. I saw the original movies when they came out in the theater when I was a kid. And I grew up with Star Wars from, you know, the 70s on. But I tell you, it's almost, I was talking to a friend of mine who's the same age, and he's like, there's just too much. There's actually too much Star Wars. It's like there almost needs breathing room for new Star Wars. That's what made the BioWare games so fantastic, is that they explored the Star Wars universe in a way that was familiar, but it was completely new. It would, you know, went back thousands of years. You got to see, you know, you got to see Jedi and Sith at their height. You got to interact with Star Wars-esque characters, but it wasn't, oh, there's C-3PO again, and R2-D2 again. And I'm really sick of it. I mean, Battlefront, you know, was a good idea in concept. I find it kind of boring in theory because it's like, all right, again, I've seen this my entire life, and I'll even be sacrilege and say the new movies, same thing. It's like, all right, it was fun to a point, but enough is enough. I want to see new. So, as much as I'm excited about a Star Wars game, the last time I saw a Star Wars game that was really well done was the BioWare games. So, we'll see. More new games. Call of Duty Infinite Warfare was announced. Big new game in the Call of Duty franchise, of course, is going to make $1 gazillion. Comes out on November 4th for PlayStation 4 and Xbox One and, of course, the PC. Something that made it look cool takes place in outer space, which was like the worst kept secret. These games do get kind of more ridiculous each time, but what seems to generate more excitement than anything else was that the Call of Duty Infinite Warfare will come with Call of Duty 4 Modern Warfare Remastered. So that is often considered the pinnacle of the Modern War franchise. People still recognize a lot of the characters and the action, even though they seem to copy most of the lines from Aliens, which bothers me to this day. But it's still a great game. It has some amazing set pieces. It's a lot of fun. And at the end of the trailer, when they show a little piece of it, I was like, wait, that's Call of Duty 4. Immediately I knew. Like, within 2 seconds, you knew what you were looking at. But that's how iconic Call of Duty 4 is. And it looks like, from what I've been reading, people are much more excited about replaying Call of Duty 4 than actually playing Infinite Warfare. It looks like to get the Modern Warfare remastered, though, which has both, you have to buy it, and they start at $80, and it goes up to $120. So you can't buy Call of Duty 4 by itself. You have to buy them together, and it looks like it's an additional price. So very smart on their part. I guess EA, you know, that's the problem. It's like each version of Modern Warfare has to do better than the last one. And it gets harder and harder to outdo yourselves, not even gameplay wise, but money wise, because their investors will expect each version to do better than the last version in terms of sales. Doesn't matter if it's better or not. It just needs to make more money. So, hey, let's take an old version of a game, update the graphics, update some of the gameplay, update some of the net code. It's probably not too hard to do. Yeah, it's an old game, but these guys are old hand at it. They have all the old models. They probably just take a lot of the old models, update some of the skins. It's definitely not cheap. I'm not making it sound like it's $10 to do this, but it's going to be a lot less expensive than rebuilding a game from scratch or making a new game from scratch. And if they could add an extra $20 and they figure a couple million more people are going to buy it, there you go. You made your money back. Next up, we have Overwatch. Overwatch, as you all know, launched beta this week, open beta. You can jump on. It's a fun game. It's a very different type of game. If you don't like PvP type shooters that are Team Fortress 2 based, you probably won't like it. But if you do, there's a lot in there. They have a competitive mode, which they were going to be using for like esports and for actual ranked matches, but it's been dropped and it will not be coming out for the launch, which is on May 24th. They didn't have any details on the updated version or any window when the release is. That's one thing I find Blizzard is as amazing as they are. They do sort of have some issues finding a balance with competitive play modes in some of their games. And I heard some rumblings of the way they were planning on doing it, that because it was going to be reset every month, that people were going to get bored with the competitive play mode after a few months, that it just was going to cause some issues. And obviously Blizzard agreed, to the point that they're removing it. It's tricky though, because it's hard to introduce a competitive play mode and you can't go back on it. Like, once it gets started, everyone's using the same system. They can reset it, but it's not an easy thing. So I have a feeling we might not be seeing this competitive play mode, at least for a little while. I can't imagine they can delay it too long, because they need a competitive play mode for it to become sort of a valid e-sports type game and something that's going to be sort of in their cadre of gaming for events. But you know, they're also not going to rush it. Although maybe they will, who knows. But I imagine hopefully we'll see it by June. Next, more Blizzard news is that if you play Hero of the Storm, they put in the Overwatch character for free for most people of Tracer. And Tracer was insanely strong. Her health, her regeneration, her basic attack damage, and her teleport ability were all being lowered. Everything about her was being reduced. There's a few things that were being boosted, but that's a way to make everyone interested in your game. Put in a character from your new game into another game, make her super OP, everyone goes insane and complains, and then maybe they want to see who this character is all along and then jump onto the Overwatch bandwagon. But I do find it strange that Blizzard did this by accident. They're kind of the masters of balance, and they're very good at figuring out very quickly what is overpowered and what isn't. they have a lot of analytical data on the back end, so they're always analyzing it and tweaking the numbers so they can see and balance it very well. So I have a feeling, I'm just guessing here, I don't know if that was an accident, it could have been, or if it was semi on purpose, just sort of to get some word out and maybe a little bit of controversy never hurts and gets people playing Tracer for a week or two and then they bring her back down. Next up, we have Stardew Valley is adding a multiplayer and console ports. So if you have never played Stardew Valley, it's a little bit of a mouthful, you should check it out. It sold more than 1 million copies. It's on Steam. It currently has 19,890 overwhelmingly positive reviews. It has an average of a 97 on Steam, 97% positive. And it is a great little game. It looks absolutely gorgeous. It's a farming simulation, relationship simulation, dungeon simulation, fishing exploration game. It's really fun. It's a beautiful, beautiful game. If you are into the sort of the simulated life games, you know, whether it's the Animal Crossing type games or anything like those types, you'll like this a lot. The graphics are, I really like when they've been doing with these 8-bit graphics, but they're done using, you know, 24-bit, 32-bit color schemes. So it's like 8-bit graphics done with modern technology, so it just looks that much more vibrant and colorful. There's a lot of mods for the games. It's just a fantastic game. It's really a lot of fun. I imagine the multiplayer aspect is going to bring a lot of people to it. And then once it gets to the console, even more people will jump on it. I've even been telling a lot of my friends to start playing it who aren't big gamers. And they like it and their kids like it because it's sort of a game that anyone can play. It's very easy to get into and it's very addictive and it has sort of a low impact. And you can play it for you can play it for 15 minutes. You can play it for a couple of hours. You can just sort of go in, play a little bit, and then leave. Definitely check it out. Next up, more Blizzard news. So I talked a lot about this last week, that there was an illegal WoW server that would have the alpha version of WoW, the very, very first version of WoW on it. It was a Nostradamus server, and it was a vanilla WoW server that was being run illegally. It was shut down. People went crazy. It had something like 700,000 people on the server, and I went through extreme detail, if you want to listen to my last podcast, why Blizzard will never really have the ability to make a vanilla WoW server. It's just technologically way, way too complex. However, according to this, that the team behind Unauthorized Server is going to meet with Blizzard, and I'd be very fascinated. I wish I was a fly on the wall on that, because I can see Blizzard wanting to do this. It's a question of how do they do it while maintaining the same level of support that they do for the main WoW game, keeping patches updated, keeping security updated, as well as keeping, you know, the help system and all the admin functionality in the game while being able to charge money. And one of the things they mentioned is that they were toying around with the idea of almost like franchising it out to another third party and having them do it. So I would be curious to see if they can figure that out. Is that sort of the best of both worlds? That way Blizzard can have someone else manage the game for them while they make all the money, or they make most of the money. And maybe there's some modified in-service agreement that when you sign up for one of these servers, that you don't expect the same amount of functionality that you would on the full-fledged servers. Maybe there's restrictive ways you can play it. But I tell you, there's a big difference between 700,000 people playing on an illegal bootleg server for free versus people playing on something that they're paying a monthly subscription for, that they expect things from and they expect services from. And that's the issue, is that Blizzard can't do this for free, and they're not going to do it just to do it. The amount of effort and money that they have to sink into maintaining this is massive. And it creates a whole new team that would have to do this in you know, all the other languages, most likely, unless they say, okay, we're just going to do it in English, we're just going to have a small number of servers, and that's it. Again, I doubt anything will come of this. I think they're more just talking to them to find out how they did it or what they found. It's more of an exploration talk than to actually turn this into something serious, but curious. Next up, we have there's new XCOM 2 mods from the guys who did the Long War Studios. If you have played XCOM, XCOM is great. XCOM 2 is even better, although it's weird. XCOM 2 kind of came and went. XCOM 2 had tons of excitement, came, and then it's just gone. And, you know, it's one of the things I like to do is I like to go onto Steam. Not onto Steam, sorry. I like to go onto some of the streaming platforms, whether it's Twitch or YouTube, and just see, like, where games are ranked. And sometimes you'd be amazed what games are ranked really, really low. Like on Twitch. On Twitch, there's like no one playing XCOM 2. And this game just came out. I see that all the time. Like games that just came out that are brand new that are like no one is playing. Which either means that no one wants to watch it, which is most likely. Or, you know, people are just flocking towards like the Hearthstones and the MOBAs, and that's all people want to see. But it's kind of disheartening when I see a brand new game that's been out for just a few months that is actually quite fun to watch other people play. Like 300 people are watching, and then there's 100,000 people watching Dota. So anyhow, back to the original story is that XCOM 2, there's a studio called The Long War, and what they did is they took XCOM and they added mods to make the game really, really long, to make the game take much longer and make your characters level up very slowly, and it made it sort of a grind fest, but a fun grind fest. And they were so, the makers of XCOM were so enamored by what they did is they brought them on board to make official new mods. And so they're going to be coming out with brand new mods. There's going to be 10 new enemies, alien enemies. There's going to be soldier class construction kit. There's a toolbox with new options. There'll be all these new things you'll be able to add to it. I weirdly purposely play games and then I kind of stop halfway because I want them to come out with new tools and new, you know, new mods and new items, and then I continue playing it. XCOM 2, I almost finished it, but I'm kind of almost did this on purpose. I kind of want to wait for new mods to come out and download them and then pick up my game. Unfortunately, a lot of this times you can't do that. It will invalidate the game, but give it a try. But if those of you who haven't tried XCOM 2, and if you like strategy games, I would strongly recommend you check it out. It's a fantastic, awesome game I was playing for months at a time. Next up is Battleborn launched. If you liked the Borderlands games, you would probably like Battleborn. I have not played too much of it. I found the beta very boring when it was available a couple weeks ago. I do like the Gearbox games. I like Borderlands 2 quite a bit, but I just there's something about it that just turned me off. Although I have some friends of mine, some very reputable sources who love the Borderlands games, said it's really great. I'm definitely going to give it a try. I'm just sort of getting as much Overwatch in this week as possible. And then I'm going to jump on to the Borderlands and give that a try. Borderlands, Battleborn. From what I know, you know, the game is kind of strange. It's getting lumped in with Overwatch, but it's nothing like it. It has some aspects. There is a MOBA to it, and there's sort of a PvP type aspect, but there's also a large single player aspect. There's about 9 hours of gameplay from what I hear, and it can be replayed with multiple characters. Something else, Battleborn has 25 characters, Overwatch has 21 characters, they both have weird characters, they both seem to have the same types of characters, whether it's snipers and tanks, just each one does it. So it's one of those two ideas that are similar that came out at the same time within weeks of one another. Sometimes you see that in the movies, you know, like when two volcano movies come out at the exact same time, or two disaster movies come out at the exact same time. Now you have two games coming out at the nearly exact same time that are similar, but yet they're very different. I would check it out if you liked any of the Borderlands games. I know my friends that love Borderlands love this game so far. Next up, we have Fable. The developer of Fable, Lionhead, officially closed. This actually was a pretty big deal. So for those of you who don't remember, Lionhead was originally made by Peter Molyneux, In 1996, Peter Molyneux was probably one of the top three rock stars of gaming. He's been very quiet recently, but man, when you would see him live at a talk at GDC, I mean, he would capture the room. Like, he would walk in and he could capture the room. He's sort of like the Steve Jobs of gaming. He always had some crazy ideas. He always had some really good games, really wacky games back in the day when, a long time ago, he made Populous, which was one of the, well, most popular games at the time. He made this other game, Power Monger, which was, I just loved that game when I was, well, kind of a kid. He just made really bizarre games, to say the least. His games just were just kind of out there. They just kind of did bizarre things. He was also known as writing really good AI. He came out with Black and White. If you want to take a look at that game, wow, the game came out almost maybe 15 years ago, but you were a god and you had an animal that was your representative of yourself on the world, and it could be like a cow, and the people would worship the cow and the cow would do things, and then if you were good, the cow would become more angelic, and if you were bad, the cow would become like more demonic. It was a weird, weird game, but it was unique, I'll give you that. They came out with the Fable games, which everyone knows. The Fable games, again, very unbalanced, but had a completely unique look to them, completely unique feel, a lot of blue language, UK type language, which is fun, English language, not English American, English UK English. It's just bizarre games. Also, I can't remember if it was Fable 2 or Fable 3 has one of the best plot twists of all time of gaming. It really, I almost don't want to spoil it. I think it was Fable 2. It had a really, really good plot twist when you played that game. And the movies, which again, really strange game, where you would, it probably would have done very well now more as an iPad type game, where you would, well, run a movie studio and make movies using some kind of predetermined sets and actors. Really strange game. If there's one consistency between Lionhead, is that they made really weird things. They were the definition of out of the box. So they were bought by, it was founded in 1996. Microsoft acquired Lionhead in 2006. And Molyneux left Microsoft and he started Lionhead. He started another company after he left in March of 2012. He left Lionhead. And since then, they were going to come out with Fable Legends, which was really not good. I played it. It was not a good game. It was like one person was the bad guy, and a couple of the people were the good guys, and it was the bad guy trying to kill the good guys. It was set in the Fable universe. It was multiplayer only. It seemed really forced. It was bizarre. It was fun for like 10 minutes, and then you never wanted to play it again. The game was canceled. The studio was closed. None of it really comes as a surprise. And yeah, they just kind of moved on from there. Next up, we have Nintendo is selling the majority ownership of the Seattle Mariners baseball team. So I'm a huge baseball fan, gigantic, gargantuan, huge baseball fan. I go to something like 40 games a year. Big New York Mets fan, so there you go. That's my team. So I like anything baseball related, and there was something fun about knowing that Nintendo owned the Seattle Mariners. But they did pretty well. Get this. In 1992, Nintendo bought the Seattle Mariners for $100 million. Think about that. They bought a baseball team for $100 million. That is ridiculous. It is now worth $1.4 billion today. So pretty good return on investment. And in fact, Nintendo's still going to own 10% of the team. So, you know, they bought it for $100 million. They're selling it for $1.4 billion approximately. Well, that's what it's worth. They'll probably still get around that. They'll probably get more than that because it's not like baseball teams come up for sale that often. So people will often pay way more than they're worth just because if they really want that baseball team, they got to buy that one that's going up for sale because it's extremely rare. So Nintendo, I guess they're really hurting for some cash or they just don't want to deal with it anymore. But yeah, sorry to see Nintendo go, because they always had some pretty funky things going on with the Seattle Mariners when they owned the team. Oh, I got a few more stories, and then we'll wrap this up. We got Cyberpunk 2017 is more ambitious than The Witcher in every front. CD Projekt Red has been saying. So CD Projekt Red, if you haven't played The Witcher 3, there's a new expansion coming out. The screenshots are ridiculous. Witcher 3, I talked about it last year. It is one of my favorite games. The game is obnoxiously large, and I mean that in the nicest way possible. But man, this game is huge. I mean, I've seen... Everyone goes on about Fallout 4. Fallout 4 is big. Witcher 3 is just obnoxious. It is such a big... They're both big games. I'm not going to say... I don't know which one's actually bigger, but they're both really, really big games. And then they went on to say that Cyberpunk 2077, which everyone's looking forward to, is their game coming out after Witcher 3, destroys Witcher in every way possible. It's more ambitious. Here's the exact quote. The game is more ambitious on every single front, in the development and on the marketing side. It's even better, even bigger, and more revolutionary than The Witcher. And that is a huge game. Now, The Witcher 3 is obnoxious. It is so big. I know many people who played this game for 50 hours and realized they were still in the first chapter and realized there's still two more to go. And they stopped playing because the game was that big. It is a big, big game. I don't know if that's such a good thing. It's like, you know what? Well, maybe release the game instead of having to make a game that is a 500-hour game. It's going to probably do pretty well if it's still a 200-hour game will probably still do pretty well. You know, used to do this also BioWare. BioWare was the kings of making games that were just way too big for their own britches. When they came out with the Baldur's Gate series, Baldur's Gate 2 is insane. I remember I went to a talk at GDC, and they said there's something like 1.4 million interactive objects in that game. You know what? If you're going to be clicking on 1.4 million objects, that's too many objects, okay? Yes, you're trying to make a real world, but it gets to a point of we get it, okay? Every bucket can be opened. We don't need to open up every single bucket in the game. So the game is supposed to come out somewhere between 2017 and 2021. We'll probably start hearing more about it because The Witcher 3, when the last DLC comes out, it's going to probably, you'll start hearing about this because they'll have nothing else to talk about and they have to make money somehow. So hopefully it comes out more, a little quicker than they say. The other thing is The Witcher 3, the new download, the DLC that comes out in a few weeks. I think it's like Blood or Wine. I'm trying to remember it. The graphics look gorgeous and supposedly the DLC is bigger than most games. So, you know, if you want a game that will last you forever, just download Witcher 3 with the DLC. That will last you months, trust me. And it's worth it. That game is one of my top favorite games ever. The story is really, really good. The graphics are great. It twists and turns in ways you can't imagine. And The Bloody Baron is one of the greatest stories I've ever seen in gaming, period. Very, very, very well done. Next up, Dishonored 2 is getting a release date. It's coming out November 11, 2016. So this is one of those ugly stepchild games. Bethesda came out with Dishonored a few years ago, and it was a first-person shooter game. It was developed at Arkane Studios that it was released by Bethesda. It came out like in 2012. It was the game of the year. It did really not so great. I mean, it was one of these games that didn't really seem to like latch on to anything, but the reviews were fantastic. The game was really fun. I know people who hate first-person shooters who love this game. And there was a lot of expansions. There was downloadable content that came out for it. Game of the Year edition and so forth. It just sort of came and went. But I'm glad Bethesda decided to come out with the Dishonored 2. They're going to hopefully do kind of go down maybe the same route that Uncharted was. Is that Uncharted, if you remember, as I was saying earlier, kind of came... Very good game. A lot of people loved the game. Didn't seem to make a lot of waves. Then Uncharted 2 came out. Suddenly everyone was talking about Uncharted like this game has been around forever and it was the end-all be-all and everyone was playing it. This might happen. Maybe Dishonored 2 comes out. Everyone starts talking about it, starts saying how amazing Dishonored 1 was. People jump back, start playing it. So looking forward to that. Next up, we have Ubisoft is coming out hard down hard on division cheaters this week. So the division, here's another game that people will be studying for years to come. It was a game that everyone couldn't wait to come out. It comes out. It does really well. Gangbusters, sells a gazillion copies, and suddenly everyone is cheating. I mean, I've heard more cheating in this game than probably any game I've ever seen. This game is just rampant with cheating. People, and the game is ruining the game. There's all these issues and problems, so it's weird. It's like a game that sells really, really well that has really a lot of problems. And from what I've heard, and this is rumor and speculation, that they have a trusted client-side model, which basically means that the server essentially accepts what the clients send as correct. So if you say that your system tells the server, hey, I got infinite health and infinite ammunition, the client decides to accept that. That is weird because that's not really the way you're supposed to build these things. You never have client trust side. That's nuts. You have a server-side model where the server acts as the main hub of the game and everything the server says is accurate, and it almost basically never trusts the client. I'm super, super simplifying this. I don't want to get into all the details of how these work, but supposedly the rumor is that's true. If that is true, you can't really fix this game that easily. You can't just go in and decide, okay, we're going to change from a client-side model to a server-side model. Well, you can't just do that. It just requires rewriting the entire game from scratch. So hopefully this isn't true. But right now, Ubisoft is so fed up with so many people cheating from The Division, they've decided instead they're just going to ban everyone permanently. So if you get cheated once, you're handing out a warning. If you're cheating again, then you're banned forever. So it's kind of a weird thing to do. It's like, okay, everyone buy our game, but if you cheat, then you're banned for life. I get it. I get that you can't play and it's ruining the experience for everyone else and that shouldn't be allowed. But, you know, if you're going to build the game, you should probably do a little bit better job of making sure that people can't cheat in the first place. I would think a better model would be that you make two servers and you make the cheating server and the normal server. And that way it's like, okay, you're not banned. Okay, everyone who's decided you've cheated twice, you now have to play with other cheaters. So all the cheaters play with each other and then everyone else who's clean plays with each other. Again, there's no perfect answer to this. I just find it strange that a game that was so heavily talked about and so many people were looking forward to and it sold so well was done like this. And last but not least, and this is the last news story, is Xenoblade Chronicles is coming out for the Wii U Virtual Console. It's $20. If you have not played Xenoblade Chronicles, I would say get it, especially if you have a Wii U and if you like Japanese gaming, role-playing games. This is a really fun game. It is kind of a wacky game. It sort of takes place on, again, this is why I like Japanese games. They're wacky. There's two gods that are fighting with each other, and you are a creature that lives on one of these gods. These gods are like the size of worlds. And these two gods are kind of frozen in time, and you have adventures while you're on one of the gods, and you sort of run around the god. And it's really neat, just the way if you look up in the sky, you can see the outline of the god, and you can see like where his head is, and you see the other god. And then as you move through the game, you see different viewpoints of where you are on the god's body. It's really a cool game. It has a whole style to it unlike anything you've probably ever seen. It was a huge hit in Japan. It came out in America. It's one of those games that no one could ever find. You either had to buy it, and if you didn't buy it right away, you never got a chance to get it. It did come out on the 3DS, but it was portable and $40. I don't know. It seems like the type of game that really needs a big screen. I didn't even bother buying it or playing it on the 3DS because it sort of needed a grandiose scale. So kind of a weird decision for them to do that. But if you got a Wii U and you have $20 and you're interested in Japanese role-playing games and want to get something that was a big to-do at the time, definitely check it out. It'll take you a while. It's a long game. It's a good 100-hour-plus game. So, wow, for a slow news week, I sure had a lot of news, maybe too much news. So let's go into game talk. So Game Talk this week is I'm going to go through kind of a little bit of my history with Blizzard, as well as what I knew about Titan and how it became Overwatch. So again, this is a lot of this is just sort of my experiences as well as what I've known from talking to various anonymous sources of people who work at Blizzard and who used to work at Blizzard. So with that, I will just jump into sort of my background and sort of tell you some of the fun little anecdotes as well of things that I did at Blizzard. Some of you guys have heard some of these stories before. For many of you, this is probably brand new, but in the beginning, I was first exposed to Blizzard in the year of 2000. At the time, they were hiring some people for a new top secret game, and one of my friends was basically got contacted for an interview. At the time, he was a 3D designer, and he was designing levels for Quake, just for fun. And he was designing really crazy levels. And out of nowhere, literally out of the blue, he was sort of in a clan that was designing these levels. He gets a call saying, hey, you know, we'd be interested in flying you out to Blizzard and talking to you because we have a game and we want to talk to you. So he went out there. He talked to them. It was all hush-hush. It was all top secret. And he told me about it, and he said, yeah, I'm going to take the job. And he left. He went there. He moved out. He quit his job. He quit his whole life. He moved out, and he went to join Blizzard. And that's kind of how I started to get involved, is through him and then other friends who I met afterwards. And at the time, it was World of Warcraft. They were looking for 3D level designers. And this is important because I just want to give you an idea of the type of people that play and work at Blizzard, that these guys are gamers. And this is pretty well known. And a lot of these guys love first-person shooters. They were very big into first-person shooters. They'd make a lot of the games. You've heard this before, that a lot of people like to make games that they like. Well, this is no surprise. A lot of the guys at Blizzard, they liked first-person shooters. And they also liked EverQuest. Again, this is nothing new. They wanted to make their own EverQuest. So they went around. They saw who was making. At the time, the tools were very limited for WoW. Not for WoW. For Doom. And there was people who were doing really strange things. And this, my friend, was one of them. Is that he was making gigantic characters using Doom tools. He was making really big levels. And that's something they wanted World of Warcraft to have. They wanted to have really big models. And if you, example is when you enter Stormwind and those gigantic statues, everything in Stormwind is huge. And at the time, and now you look at it, and I mean, you probably still think it's pretty big, but back then that was a big deal to have really, really big, gigantic screens, have all this gigantic architecture, just everything majestic and huge. It really wasn't possible. EverQuest had very large view distances, but it was very plain. It had a lot of like trees and grass and sky. It was nothing like what you would see in World of Warcraft. So they wanted to really transform the industry, not just from a gaming point of view, but from what you expect from a game. And that's what they were looking for. So they flew him out. He got hired. They couldn't really tell me anything about what he was doing. But eventually, he told me a little bit about it. And a few years go by, and I come in for E3. And it was the summer of 2002. And I actually was able to play the game for the first time. I have a fun story, is that I'm in his apartment. I'm playing World of Warcraft. And this is it's not even an alpha, it's like pre-alpha. And all that was available was Northshire. You could be a human. You can go to the mines. The highest I remember, I got up to level 7. That was it. It was totally unbalanced. I was walking around. Spiders were absolutely destroying me. Goldshire was there. But things like Stormwind was sort of there. And I remember aspects. I remember some things that were pretty cool. What they did is that the cities that weren't built, they just had big swaths of land where the city would be. And then they would have all the vendors from the city standing outside in lines. So you can actually go up to the city and go to the various vendors and buy things if you wanted to. it was pretty cool. Only very little of the game was actually working. Again, really only the Northshire area was sort of up. As I was wandering the map, you would actually see police barricades on the map itself where they just had, where they stopped development. I actually went past those, kept going, and it was just land. I mean, it was just land. There was nothing there. There was no creatures. The map was sort of working. The map was really, really rough. But I remember walking around just as much as I could because that fighting the monsters was very, very unfulfilling once you're getting killed constantly. But I always have that story of like I was playing the game when it was and I was literally the only person on the server at the time. The only time in my life I ever played World of Warcraft and I was the only person in the entire world playing it. So that was fun. In addition, while we were there, I was actually playing Warcraft 3. And I remember Warcraft 3 was about to come out. It was being released on July 3rd. And we're hanging out, and we're just fooling around. I was playing the game. I was going through the missions. And then they said, hey, you guys want to play a multiplayer mission? Let's do an AI. We were about to actually go out to dinner. And they said, hey, yeah, you know what? Let's test it out. And these are the guys who wrote the AI. And this is funny, is that it was just me, my friend, and two other guys from Blizzard. So it was four of us, and we're like, hey, let's do 4 versus 4. So we do 4 of us versus 4 of the AI, and we got absolutely destroyed. The AI killed us so fast. So we're like, okay, let's do 4 versus 3. So we did 4 versus 3, 4 humans versus 3 AI. We went up against the AI. We got destroyed again. We're like, you know what? And I remember them saying they were laughing about it. We're all in the same office. They're like, yeah, you know what? We can write the AI, but we can't play the game that great. And they're like, okay, let's play 4 versus 2. So we went 4 versus 2, 4 humans versus 2 AI. Finally win. Finally kill them. Then we went out to eat. I don't know. At least a fun story for me. It's just I remember that these guys, as much as they wanted to play, they were talking about how they have to concentrate so much on balance and game design and mechanics that they're actually not even that great at playing the game. And how that, of course, that they would do is go to outside sources, find the best players, find people in clans, find people who are really good at the gameplay competitively, and have them test it because that's what they were interested. And that's one of the secrets Blizzard's really good at doing, is that they will find the actual people that were, the masters of the game. For example, another story I remember is with World of Warcraft, is what they did is that they found all the leaders of the top guilds of EverQuest at the time, and they actually gave them invitations, really nice invitations, to come play the game. And so they would get their entire guild over to World of Warcraft and have them not just play it in a private setting, but then get all their, to get a lot of the information of how the game should be built. I even remember that I was at GDC, Game Developers Conference, and a couple of my friends from Blizzard were there, and we were talking. These guys were working in World of Warcraft at the time, and we went to a talk of like lessons learned from EverQuest. And I remember this specifically, that they were talking about things about, they did testing on some of their maps in EverQuest, and they showed this amazing map of where everyone was walking in one of their main cities, and there was two auction houses in the city, and one auction house was always being visited more often than the other auction house, and they couldn't figure out why. They did all this math, and after a while they finally figured it out, that the one auction house was exactly 2 steps closer to the entrance than the other auction house. And people are so adept and so good at figuring out the little nuances of maximizing their time in these games that even subconsciously that they were able to go, and they would rather go to the auction house that was 2 steps out of hundreds of steps. It was 2 steps, a millisecond closer than the other one. But people were able to pick up on that. And they decided, and they rebuilt the game so that things were equidistant, or if they had, 2 auction houses, they make them as far away. As close or as the same distance as possible, because they were trying to split up the game and not have everyone in one area, so the server for server balance. But one thing I remember specifically they said is that one of the issues they had was quests and having people give quests And they wish at the time when they built EverQuest that they had a better system at something like putting a question mark over the person's head. And I remember that. And also a tutorial telling people specifically how to do certain things. And I swear to God, the next, when I was in Friends of Family Alpha of World of Warcraft, those same exact things from the talk, everything they said in the talk that EverQuest said they wished to do was showing up in the game. Coincidence or not, who knows? But a lot of these things that you see, like the question marks over the head, were probably from that talk at GDC. Because everything they said all appeared in the game weeks later. Everything. It was really funny. I should always ask them, and I never asked them if that's exactly where they got it from. I think it is, just my opinion. So with that is next 2003. I think it was late 2003 that me and my friends, we all got invited to the Friends and Family Alpha for World of Warcraft. At the time, we only played Alliance because that's all that was available. I think it was you could only get up to level 20. And then over the course of a year, they would slowly add more content. You would eventually have different races you can play, different classes. Eventually, you went to the Horde. I remember each time they would open up a new section, like the Undead, I remember everyone rushing to the section. It was completely unplayable. And I mean, do you think launch days were bad? It was like you got one frame a second if you were lucky. Really, really hard to play the game. It was a really slow grind because it took them quite a while to get up to the max. Eventually it was up to level 40, then level 50, then level 60. Eventually get up to the top. It was actually more like level 40 and then 45, then 50, 55. Slowly they kept adding more and more. So we got to play the game for pretty much an entire year in the Friends and Family Alpha or Beta before it eventually came out on November 23rd, 2004. At the time, one thing we actually did is, it's funny because as people who play WoW know, when the game first launched, it turned out that people didn't really like to play monsters. So there was many more people who play Alliance than they play Horde. That's actually one of the main reasons why they added beautiful Horde creatures like the Blood Elves and such, is they wanted to balance out the prettiness of the races. Because you know what? Especially in Asia, people didn't want to play trolls. People did not want to play orcs. They really wanted to play humans and elves. That's the characters they wanted to play. So it unbalanced the races quite a bit in the game in the beginning. But one thing we did is that my friends at Blizzard said that the Alliance was built first and then Horde, so a lot of the quests were much better for Horde and a lot of the experience was much more fun for Horde, because when they first started to make Alliance, they didn't exactly know, not that they didn't know what they were doing, but they were, you know, starting, that's what they started with. And then when they got to Horde, they had a better feel for everything. So we all went to Mal'Gaena server and we all had, all the Blizzard people were there, and all my friends and I, we all went there with them. And sure enough, that's the at the time of launch, and I think still to this day, there was more Horde than Alliance. It was like one of the only servers that had more Horde than Alliance, and not just by a small amount, but by a huge amount. And that's kind of why, is that the people in the know all went to Horde, and they all went to the Mal'Gaena server because they all wanted to be together. So that's where we started out. Then you had things like the Goon Squad, and you had Aftermath, and you had some of the most famous guilds in the world that were all still on the Mal'Gaena server, one of the top servers at the time. But if you ever wanted to wonder why that one was the only one that seemed to have more Horde than Alliance, that could have been the reason. Again, completely unconfirmed why that happened, but according to what I know, that's exactly what happened. Something interesting happened in mid-2005, and if people don't remember this about the original vanilla servers, is that WoW was not completely done. If you played the game, there was a lot of content that was missing. Not necessarily missing, but if you went from level 40 to level 60, there was a lot. There wasn't a lot of quests. There was a lot of grinding. There was entire sections of the map, especially in the 50s, that were just empty. It was literally just grinding through. You have a couple quests and then just killing things to get your levels up. And unlike now, where I hear people get up to like level 100 in a weekend, you know, back then, from getting level 1 to level 60 was hundreds of hours. I mean, it was a slow slow process. I know people who would take months to get up to level 60, and they weren't doing, like, you know, oh, just a few quests. They're doing a lot of quests. It was a lot. It was a big game, and they wanted to maximize as much time within the game as possible. There was rumors at the time in mid 2005 that NCSoft, who moved into the Irvine area, started to suck up WoW employees. At the time, they made things like Lineage 2, they made City of Heroes, they made Guild Wars, and some of that is definitely true. The Guild War guys, for example, and I met with them and actually have an interview with them. If you go back, way back to one of the earliest Gaming Steves, these are some of the original guys who worked on Battle.net, way back when. They wrote the original code. This is well known. And they did. The NCSoft guys were coming in hard. They were doing tons of MMOs. And for various reasons, people were burnt out on WoW. They were working on it at that time. By the time it came out, it was already being worked on for 4 or 5 years. And there was still a lot that had to get done. I remember I was talking to my friends there. They thought if this game sold 500,000 copies, they'd be happy. And if they sold 1 million copies, they'd be ecstatic. Absolutely ridiculous. Well, as we all know, it sold a little bit more than 1 million copies. And I think for some people decided that the pressure of success was too much, or having to deal with all the pressures of having to make the game as good as millions of people wanted it. And there was a bit of a brain drain. I remember it really took, I'd say, people don't remember this, but it took like a good year and a half, 2 years for it to feel like the game was completely fleshed out and done. By no means did this undermine the enjoyment and fun of the game. If anything, people still, as you well know, have fond memories of, quote, vanilla WoW. But I also have very fond memories of grinding through vanilla WoW, especially levels 50 to 60, man. It was rough. It was rough. So why am I telling you all this? The whole point of that was, A, just give you a little bit of my history of what I went through, but also give you an idea of the type of people who I work at Blizzard. You know, these are people who like shooters, they like MMOs, so that's what they decided to make. In fact, they were such big fans of shooters, if everyone remembers, they started working on something in September 20th, 2002, something called StarCraft Ghost, which was a shooter at the time. It was designed by Nihilistic Software. It was going to come out for the GameCube, the Xbox, and PlayStation 2. And the game was mostly built and finished. They actually had it demoed, and then you could play at E3. You could have played this game. If you look on YouTube, there's videos of people playing it. I played this game, and it was okay. I mean, I'm not going to say it was like the best shooter I ever played. It definitely had its, I don't know, high points. But as you know, eventually something strange happened to Ghost. It moved over. It went to a new studio called Swinging Ape Studios, who worked on the game. They were then bought by Blizzard. And then very quietly, around 2005, 2006, it disappeared. And it was no longer being developed. But here's a game, you know, it's like, this is the type of game that they wanted to do. Like, the people at Blizzard, and if you watch some of the recent documentaries, these guys love shooters. They love the shooting type game. So they've been wanting to do a shooter for a long time. A lot of the people from the WoW development community were shooter fans. A lot of the people who, you know, came on to Blizzard played these types of games. So that game, here it is, yeah, demo, it was put in indefinite hold in 2006. But it was a game that they tried, and, you know, it just didn't have that mark of excellence. So that's no coincidence. Blizzard's done this before. There was a game way back when, Warcraft Adventures, that was supposed to be like a point-and-click anime-type game, never came out. You could find lots of information on it and screenshots. It actually looked pretty cool. To this day, I wish I could try it and play it. I bet you it probably isn't so good in retrospect, because it was almost 20 years old. But it had a good idea, and I guess World of Warcraft sort of became that in a way. Another example is Hearthstone. Hearthstone is, I remember my friends at Blizzard, they would tell me that they would have game nights. And in fact, if you go to Blizzard, they have a room filled with games, tons and tons of games. It's really cool. It looks like, I haven't been in a little while, but it looks like a medieval castle. And it has all this, you could probably find pictures of it online. It has all this medieval type settings. And it had the door, looks like a dungeon door. It's really cool. They have tons of games in there. And these guys play games all the time. Well, one thing they used to do is have Magic the Gathering Night. And, hey, no surprise, these guys love collectible card games. They used to have tournaments in the house. They used to play all the time. I know these guys play a lot of poker as well. And they would have Magic tournaments every so often, casual tournaments. And, hey, what do you know? The WoW collectible card game, if you remember, came out. If that was done by third party, you know, it was an actual physical card game. But I remember they were fooling around. Some of the guys decided, hey, you know what? We have all these WoW assets. At that point in mid-2000, they had so many assets. Not mid-2000, late 2000, like 2010 or so. They have so many assets, so many options that they can use. Let's throw something together. And they just sort of put something together. Small teams started to fool around with making the game. They built a little small prototype in Flash. It did really well. People seemed to like it, and they just sort of were fooling around. It eventually turned into Hearthstone. And, you know, here's a company that was really deciding to do, you know, at the time they were doing really, really, really big games. Think about it. They did, like, World of Warcraft, one of the biggest games ever. StarCraft 2, although StarCraft itself, StarCraft is a pretty big game for what it is. StarCraft 2, so big that it was released in three stages. Diablo 3, huge, huge game, and that's a very big game. They still release more content. You know, they're really into big-type games. And Hearthstone was a very different approach for them. It's kind of a smaller-type game that is based on a collectible card game. Who would anyone want to play this? And they had to make something that was easy and fun to play. But again, this is something they liked. They obviously were something they wanted to do, they wanted to play. So they started down the road. As we all know, it just did really, really well. I remember talking to my friends there, and they said people were spending so much money on the beta that they couldn't believe it. And they thought, man, and they knew they were going to get their cards back. They weren't going to get the exact cards. Any money they spent in the early beta, they were going to get wiped out their decks, but they would get all the decks back and they can reopen them. They said, if people are spending that much money in the early beta of the game, then this game is going to be a huge hit. They were right. They were absolutely right. The game has now 50 million people. And it is, again, under that easy to learn, hard to master category. But, you know, from what I know from talking to my friends, is like there was some people weren't sure, because Magic is a fun game, but it's kind of niche. You know, it's hard. It's not a game you can just look at and watch. It's difficult to just pick up and watch it and see people and have any idea what's really going on. But they did it. With Hearthstone, they managed to hit all those goals. They wanted to make a game that was easy to pick up, easy to learn, easy to play, fun to watch, and very difficult to completely master. And with that, we'll get to Titan. So all of that leads up to Titan. So with Titan, it was, well, let me back up a little. With Titan is that they wanted to make a game, again, similar to the type of games that they loved. They loved the shooter type games. They liked the Sims type games. They liked the Grand Theft Auto type games. One game they were playing a lot of at the time, at least my friends were, was Team Fortress 2. I would log on. These guys were playing all weekend. And I mean all weekend. I'd see them playing 14-hour days on the weekend. And these are Blizzard employees that I'm friends with. And these guys were just playing it all the freaking time. I remember way back when, it was sometime in late 2000, that my friend told me that they were having an internal meeting to go through a new MMO that they were going to be doing. And he was real excited. Of course, he wouldn't tell me anything about it till the project was officially canceled and most of my friends, or all my friends' NDAs were up. But they did say, you know, they're working on something. And obviously Titan MMO came out. People knew it was going to be a big game. But really, what was the game? What was it actually going to be? Well, there has been some information that's been leaked. You can look it up. Some information in Kotaku, some of, you know, other sites here and there. And I will say it's fairly accurate from what I understand. I'll go into a little bit new things, but there was a part of the game where it was basically part Grand Theft Auto, part sims, part PvP, part minigames. It was going to be, from what I understand, it was going to be one large server. They were going to try to do something where everyone was kind of in one world. It was taking place on the Earth after an alien invasion. So the cities that were built were real cities. They were going to be cities like New York or San Francisco or Beijing. And they were going to be sort of tweaked, if you will. They were going to be, you know, modified in such a way so that it had sort of the same cities but completely different. Again, kind of like Grand Theft Auto, they were going to add new parts of the world as the game progressed. So not everything would be open at first. There would be a car. You would actually have your own car that you can update and customize. Again, kind of a Grand Theft Auto aspect to it. There was also sort of two aspects to the world. There was a Sims part of the world. This part was called Alias. And this is where you had a mundane job, where you're like an engineer, a butcher, etc. And this was going to be similar to The Sims. Now, again, something I have to mention, this is very fluid. Like, the design and functionality and the amount of people working on this game, nothing was kind of set in stone. And this sort of came and went. So it's not like, oh, this is exactly what the game was like. No, this was a game in development. Things change in development all the time. I also remember when World of Warcraft had less races and less classes. But then over time, they decided to add more to it. And they actually put in the Diablo build-like system for as you leveled up classes. They added more races because, you know, again, development of the game. So at the time, there was a time where the game was a very much a Sims-type game. And there, within the world, you would interact with the city. You would actually fully interact with it. You can run businesses. That's where you would also get a lot of your crafting material. You would have to go through the businesses, get your crafting material, things like that. The second part of the game was the agent part of the game. And that's where you would go on missions. And that's sort of kind of the action part of the game, where there was two factions. There was Overwatch, which was the Alliance faction, kind of like S.H.I.E.L.D., if you will, in the Marvel Universe. And then the Horde-type faction, which, according to various, they gave me different names. One person said Venom, one person said Chaos, one person said Talon. I think it's Talon now in Overwatch, probably is, but that would be the Terrorist or the Horde-type faction. So it's much like WoW, there was going to be two factions. And that is where there would be mini games. That's where you can do PvP, and that's where you can sort of do the action part of the game. So again, there was sort of the Alias part and the agent part. Well, one of the games, mini games that was mostly done, that they were playing a fair amount, it was a game that was like a Team Fortress 2 mini game. And this was, again, just a lot of these games were built. For most companies, these games are built to test the physics, to test shooters, to test like the accuracy of guns, just to test the tools of the games themselves to make sure they work correctly. And this was one of them they built. And at the time, you had different character classes that you can become. And each class had a unique ability. Again, kind of like Team Fortress 2. There was Tracer, which at the time, actually, let me back up. It was Jumper, who became Tracer. You had Juggernaut, which became Reinhardt. You had Reaper, which became Reaper. There was Titan, there was Ranger. I wasn't exactly sure who they became, but these were all different classes that you can be. And they would fool around with the game, but at the time, you know, and they would come back and play this mini game. My friend said they played it quite a bit. And it was good. It was fun. It was like a Team Fortress-like type game. But that's kind of as far as they got. There wasn't full assets and everything. The levels were just sort of built, and it was made really just to fool around with the physics. The guns all had the same type of guns. They had very small bullets. The bullets were very tiny. There was actually the guns weren't fully fleshed out. Like, they didn't have the different types that they had now. And again, this went through many levels of development. But the Overwatch, if you see now, a lot of what's in Overwatch is from Titan. A lot of the elements you can see actually came from it, because people are wondering, well, is Titan ever going to probably come out? In a way, it did, because Overwatch has a lot of these same elements. Whatever happened to Titan and why it collapsed and failed, I have no idea. There was a lot that was trying to be done. There was a lot of aspects to the game. As you can see just by the description, it was a big game. There was entire, you know, it it had a lot of aspects to it. And The Sims Online, if you remember, was a huge failure. One of the big problems with The Sims Online is there was no conflict. The game was a kind of a very boring game. It was a game that you would play, and when there's no conflict, there's no story. You know, video games get a lot of flack for having a lot of, you know, a lot of violence in them. Well, that's because conflict makes things fun. In real life, you don't want to have conflict. In real life, you want to go from your day-to-day job. You want to wake up, have breakfast, go to work or school, have lunch, go home, watch TV, do your homework, play games, go to sleep. Like, you don't want to have stressful days. But games and movies are fun because of conflict. Conflict is what makes them fun. Well, you have things like The Sims. The Sims is fun because you can do crazy things and there's lots of conflict in The Sims game. The Sims Online was kind of a boring game because, well, there's no conflict. There's nothing. There was, you know, they had to manufacture separate conflict. If you had what was rumored to be a game that was half Sims-like and half PvP minigame-like, then you have half of a game with conflict. You have a game with minigames that could be very fun, very much like World of Warcraft, where you could have PvP, arenas, heck, you could have Hearthstone. You know, it's like anything you want in these like minigames. But then with the real world, if you're just working a job isn't necessarily fun. Now, I'm sure the masters of Blizzard would have figured out what was going on and figured out ways to make those aspects more fun, but just the size and scope of the game was so massive, and just the way the industry has changed, it has gone from really, really big games that require tons of updates, gigantic teams, and huge infrastructure to small games like MOBAs, where the game is basically built, and then for the rest of your life, you just release small content updates and you have one basic game, and they're making a fortune off that. And you know what? That's kind of how Hearthstone works. And that's probably the new, you know, that's the new way games are being built. I mean, this is no secret. So anyhow, Overwatch did come from the bones of Titan. This is well known. There was mini games. One of the mini games basically was Overwatch in there. It's obviously been polished way more. The game is fantastic. It is a lot of fun. And that is pretty much the story of Titan and what happened to it. There was a big team. I do know that. At some point, there was maybe approximately 100 people on the team. It was around a long time. But I'm glad that Blizzard was able to take Titan and be able to repackage it into Overwatch so we can all still see. And some of the lore that you see in Overwatch, I've understood to have come from Titan in many ways. Obviously, the word Overwatch itself, some of the bad guys, just the concept of the structure. So, and I'm sure this will be explored quite a bit over the next coming, well, years, as they continuously release new cartoons and release new anime and comic books. I mean, they're really going crazy with this. And again, this comes from Blizzard's love of these type of games. You know, they love these type of shooters. If you watch any documentaries or hear any interviews with these guys, they say how much they did and how much they used to play obscure mods from shooters from 20 years ago that no one has heard of. But yet these guys would play, you know, constantly. And now they're making their own. So, with that, let's go into show mail.
Show mail!
So in show mail, I have a letter from Patrick O, who wrote me. He said, "Hey, Steven, previous episode you said you'd be surprised how many games are released based on legal obligations, not if the game is done. I, myself, and fellow Formite, Inkling, raised our eyebrows at this. Would you be willing or able to elaborate on this statement? Also, has the practice of releasing a game before it's been finished worse nowadays than it was in the past, or are modern cases simply higher profile? As always, Patrick." So, yeah, there's lots of games. This isn't just, you know, this isn't just the game industry. I mean, lots of industries release movies, books, TV shows, lots of stuff that's before they're fully ready to come out. Games, though, games are really tricky because you have a deadline for a game that might be set 18 months, a year, 2 years ahead of time. And that game has to come out for that day, period. You have manufacturing, you have advertising, you have, you know, all, you have trade shows, you have all this stuff. And the thing with games is that games, they're really hard to make and they take a lot of man hours. They take millions of man hours to make. So to shoot and hit one of those targets perfectly is incredibly hard. So yes, a lot of these games have to come out for legal obligations. Some of them, like, as I said, Star Wars, that had to come out. And if you look this up, there's licensing deals where they only have licenses for a certain amount of times. And if they don't come out with the game before that period of time, you lose that game. Sony has very similar things with the Marvel Universe. I believe the way it worked was if they had to come out with a Spider-Man property movie every 5 years, and if they didn't, then they would lose the license and would come back to Marvel. That's why they keep coming out with new Spider-Man movies forever. And same thing with Fantastic Four. Fantastic Four need to come out with new versions every couple of years or the property goes back to Marvel. So these games and movies and other things will be released for legal contractual obligations. One of the most obvious reasons that games get released is like if they're movie properties. You're not going to have the Ghostbusters video game come out a year later. You just won't. You're going to have the game come out when it's coming out with the movie, whether it is ready or not. Although I do hear the Ghostbusters game, the new one that's coming out, is a lot of fun. I have heard good things about that game. But these games, you know, they will come out whether or not they've been done, whether or not this has been more rampant now than back in the day. It's hard to say. I mean, most games now can be patched infinitely. It's much easier to patch a game. I would say it's, how do I say this? Back then in the day, when a game was released and it wasn't done, it was bad because it was bad forever. Okay. If you had a bad game, that game was never updated unless it was on a PC. And even then, it wasn't like today where they're coming out with patches and downloadable content. Unfortunately, I would also say that games today, a lot of them are smaller type games, not all, but smaller type games that are a little bit more limited in scope. Where a good example is first-person shooters. If you look at first-person shooters nowadays, they're a lot more linear. It's sort of like you do have the multiplayer. I'm talking about the single-player campaigns. I'm talking about the multiplayer, where you have the single-player campaign. You go from point A to point B to point C, point D, and that's it. If you look at a lot of the older games, you're given a playground where you are just sort of, okay, get to point A and point B. You figure out how to get there, and they give you lots of ways. What's it? Deus Ex is a great example of this, probably one of the best. Or the Thief games, where you're just given a level, and you have to do stuff, and you figure it out. And yeah, there's like 10 different ways to do it. Nowadays, a lot of these games is like you get to point A and point B, and yeah, you can go through 5 different ways through that building, but you got to go through that building. And everything else magically has walls on, and you can't go through it. So they make the games much more linear, and they try to make the games' experiences a little tighter so that they don't have these issues with the games missing out on the dates. But with that being said, is that, yeah, this is going to happen all the time. I'd say this happens more often with properties that are attached to games, also big sequels. I mean, if you remember when Uncharted was delayed a few times, people were upset. One time you'll also see games released a lot is at the end of quarters. If you look at the end of March, there's a lot of games that are released. Well, there's an old saying, the way games sell is It's like what they sell in the first 3 days is kind of what they sell in the first 3 weeks and then the first 3 months. So they make all their sales in the very first, the first few weeks is when almost all games sell. Unless they're like underground classics or hits or something, they sell all the games the first week. So that's why they release games at the very end of the month, because what they'll want to do is they'll want to straddle two quarters. They want to have the game come out like right when the quarter, say, one and two for their spreadsheets are out, so they can distribute the earnings throughout 2 years, over 2 quarters, over 6 months instead of 3 months. So that's something you'll see. And these games have to make those deadlines, because if they don't, you have to wait at least 3 more months, and it messes up actually their whole year. So that's something you'll see quite a bit. If it's no coincidence, it's the end of March that a lot of games would come out. Also, same thing for Christmas. Like, you can't have a game come out in December. You just can't. Your Christmas games have to come out in October, November, period, because it has to be there for Black Friday. It has to be there for the November rush and so forth. So who doesn't do this? Well, there's a few companies who don't do this. I don't know, like Blizzard. They don't do this. Blizzard has so much money and so much time that they can make games and release them when they're done. There's a few other developers that do this. Let's see. Take-Two does this. They're also good at this. They will take as much time as they need. Yeah, they still got to make certain deadlines, but when the game is done, and that is when it is released. And that is also why their games are so good. These are also companies with a lot of money, so they can waste thousands, hundreds of millions of dollars, not hundreds, but they can waste millions of dollars on a game and just sort of fool around with something to make it perfect. And that's actually also why I like playing games from those type of companies, is because they have the time to polish it. They take their time. They're not rushed by a schedule or arbitrary dates. They just do what they want and they release it when they want. So sorry for the rambling answer there, but there you go. Hopefully I answered it somewhere in there. If you have any questions, you can write me at feedback@gamingsteve.com, and I will read and answer your show mail. So with that, let's go to final thoughts.
Game and Steve's final thoughts.
So this was a long show, one of the longer ones, kind of like my old shows, which would go on for like 2+ hours. But there was a lot to talk about. Hopefully you guys learned a little bit about my experience with Blizzard and kind of what I know about some of their games and how they develop their titles and, you know, sort of their thinking behind those. As for what I'm playing right now, I'm playing Overwatch, as everyone knows. The other one I'm playing is Duck Game. Duck Game, you're like, what? Some people are telling me, Steve, you should talk about games that like no one knows about and or older games. Last week I talked about Battlezone 98, a game that was released 20 years ago that no one, or 18 years ago, that no one really played. It's been re-released. It's a really fun game. It's cheap. You get on Steam. It's really hard and really bizarre. Well, here's a game that's pretty new that was released by Adult Swim Games that also is a fun, wacky little game. It's called Duck Game. That's right, Duck. That's in D-U-C-K, Duck Game. You play a duck and you fight other ducks. It is a multiplayer-only game. That is the whole game. If you get hit by a bullet, you die. That is it. There is thousands of different levels, hundreds of different weapons, very simple controls. It is a goofy, crazy, insane game, and it is way more fun than it should be. It's not the type of game you'll play. There's no, like, intricate story. The intricate story is that you're a duck, and that you can put on silly hats, and you can take silly guns, and you can shoot other silly ducks. That's it. You can check out on Steam. It was free last week for a couple days. It's pretty cheap. I don't know what it is, like 10 bucks or something. It's fun. If you like those type of games, there's actually a lot more, like any of these games, there's a lot more skill to it than you might think. If you're like me, you'll probably get destroyed, at least in the beginning, till you learn all the moves. There's lots of like, secret moves. Some of the levels do repeat, so you do learn the levels. But yeah, if you are into little fast shooter games, Duck Game is something I would definitely recommend. And also, Stardew Valley. I'm sure everyone who wants that game has played and picked up that game. But if you haven't, I would strongly recommend it. At least check it out if you like relaxing type games where are very similar to Animal Crossing. So with that, I'm going to call it a show. Again, if you have any questions or comments, you could always write me at steve@gamingsteve.com or feedback or almost anything will come to me. Other than that, send me some show mail. I'll read it next week. Otherwise, have a good gaming week. I'll talk to you later. Bye.
Question or comment for Steve, please drop him a line at GamingSteve.com. Been listening to Gaming Steve. Until next week, viva la dance revolution!